I'm Robert Siegel, and I'm joined in the studio now by NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner and economics correspondent John Etstein. Good to see both of you.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
John, the beginning of this speech was all about the U.S. economy and about what the big challenges are and what the immediate short-term challenges are. What did the president have to say?
Well, the president said that 2010 will be all about creating jobs. He made a very spirited defense, I think, of his previous stimulus program and made it quite clear that he had inherited a big mess when he came in. At one point, he was talking about the bank mess that he'd inherited, and let's just hear a little tape of that right now.
Our most urgent task upon taking office was to shore up the same banks that helped cause this crisis. It was not easy to do. And if there's one thing that has unified Democrats and Republicans, and everybody in between, it's that we all hated the bank bailout. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. You hated it. It was about as popular as a root canal.
So the president wanted to make it very clear that he had inherited this. And I think he did a good job of that throughout. And then he turned around and said, we're going to take some of that $30 billion of that money that we used to bail out the banks and use it for a small business tax credit.
Was he saying as the banks pay it back, it would be given to community banks so that they would support small business? Was that the point?
That's right. But there's also a provision under which small businesses that hire or raise wages will be given tax credits as a result. So there were
some new ground there, some new proposal.
Yeah, some new ground there. An extension the depreciation allowance that was previously in the law that expired December 31st. But a number of things for small business. And then a sort of a laundry list of things that the president, that the House has already passed in their jobs bill that the president also says he supports.
Thank you, John. I want to turn to Julie Rovner. One of the big things to wait for in this speech was to hear what would be said in substance and in tone about health care now that the Republicans with 41 votes in the Senate and the 41st Republican, Scott Brown, having run in Massachusetts as a vote against that health care bill. The big question is, where does it go from here? And from the president, we heard what?
Well, we heard a little bit of blame taking on the president's part. He said he didn't do a very good job explaining it to the American people. A little bit of that self-deprecating humor that we got. He said he didn't take on health care because it was good politics. It's now fairly obvious. But we didn't get a really good picture of exactly where it is that he wants Congress to go. We did get the idea that he certainly doesn't want Congress to stop now that it's this close to getting done. Both the House and the Senate have passed significant overhaul bills. That has never happened before in a century of trying on this issue. On the other hand, the Senate having lost its 60th vote makes the path that Congress was on no longer viable. So they're going to have to regroup and figure out what to do. Now, the president had hinted last week that perhaps the Congress might scale back and pass only pieces of that bill. That's difficult for a lot of substantive and political reasons. And right now, the mistrust between House and Senate Democrats is exceptionally high. The president did, I think, as Mara mentioned, reach out to Republicans, said if you have some better ideas, but he ticked off this list of things that those better ideas would have to do. They would have to get uninsured people covered. They would have to reduce the deficit. They would have to shore up Medicare. So far, none of these Republican proposals that we've been hearing about, including what Governor McDonnell just talked about, meet all of those requirements in the way that the bills passed by the Democrats have.
Thank you. NPR's Julie Rovner. We're going to hear some Republican Senate reaction right now from Arizona Senator John Kyle, who's the Republican whip, serves on the Senate Finance Committee. Welcome to the broadcast, Senator Kyle.
Thank you.
And the president said if you're going to have 41 seats, your caucus, and if it's going to take 60 votes to pass anything, you've got to assume more responsibility for governing. Do you see in that, or do you hear in that statement, something that should change the attitude of Senate Republicans?
No, I heard a snide cheap shot against Republicans. the president maybe didn't realize that this thing would be as unpopular as it was. I think when he started, he thought it would be popular. I doubt that that's why he took it on. He really wanted to achieve a fundamental reform. But
the health care bill you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, that's what you're asking about, I presume, mm-hmm. because Americans finally figured out what this thing was all about, and they didn't like it, and they didn't like the way it was put together. And I think you saw in the Massachusetts election the public's reaction to that. So for the president to suggest that it's the Republicans' fault that it didn't get done is to fail to hear the message of the American people who said they didn't want it done. And I'm proud that Republicans helped to stand in the way of that particular bill passing.
Do you think there's conceivably a single Republican vote that might join in some refashioned, modified health care bill that includes what's been done?
Is what you mean by refashioned. If started over and looked at some of the fundamental reforms that Republicans have been talking about, you could easily see a very broad coalition. If, on the other hand, it's a matter of just tinkering with the existing legislation, the answer is no.
Can you answer one question that is on the minds of many Americans? How did it turn out that you need 60 votes to do anything in the United States Senate? How does that become an obvious rule of the road in Washington?
Good question. It's the rules of the Senate in which to bring a matter up or to bring it to a close, unless you have unanimous consent, then a 60-vote requirement is imposed.
But in past years, people could legislate without getting 60 votes. 56 votes might pass a bill. That doesn't happen anymore.
Well, it happens the majority of the time. But on major legislation like the health care bill, it doesn't happen. What has occurred is that instead of following the exact rules that require a certain procedure for something called cloture, the two leaders simply get together and reach an agreement that when the vote is taken, it will just be a 60-vote margin. That saves a lot of time and going through some procedural hurdles.
Is it a system that is in need of reform, or do you think that works and serves the public interest to need cloture for all major legislation?
I think on major matters, on bills like the health care bill, of course, you need to have a significant consensus. In fact, it has been said, and I think it is absolutely true, that there's never been a bill of this magnitude that passed on pure party line votes as the Democrats were trying to pass the health care bill. So it's obvious that you need a broader consensus than just the partisan 60 on the Democratic side.
Well, Senator Kyle, thank you very much for talking to us this evening. Senator John Kyle, Republican of Arizona and the Republican whip. A Democrat from the House right now, a very important one, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer. It means he's the number two man in the Democratic caucus. Do you after you've heard the President's State of the Union address and you've heard some Republican reaction right there, is there any reason to think that there's anything further to be done with health care in this Congress?
Oh, I think there clearly is, and that's what the president talked about. He said during the course of the election, almost every candidate, he didn't say this, but almost every candidate running for president on the Republican side and on the Democratic side said we needed reform. In fact, it was interesting that when he said we need health care reform, most of the Republicans stood, as well as all the Democrats stood, in recognition that the American public understand that the system is not working the way they want it to work and the way it needs to work.
But you know where the legislation stands right now. Is there any reasonable prospect of a bill?
Yes, I think there's a reasonable prospect for a bill. And I think the president, I think, energized, I think, the American public to focus on the problems that got us into a position where we needed to address health care costs for families, costs for businesses, costs for individuals, and, yes, cost for government. So I think the president spoke to it and said this was a hard thing to do. It was complicated, but it needed to be done. And what he said was we need to come together, listen to one another, listen to the people, and figure out how we can do this in a way that the American public are advantaged. And I think we'll continue to try to do that.
For that to happen, do you and your fellow members have to see some polls which show less opposition to the health care reform bill from what they know of it now? Do you have to see something move there in public opinion?
Well, I certainly think that we're a representative body, and every member of the House in particular has to be reelected every 2 years. The Founding Fathers wanted us sensitive to the public's views. That's what the House of Representatives is and does. So the answer to your question is yes, I think that the members are clearly going to be concerned about what the people in their districts who send them here to Washington think. We'll see what the reaction to the speech was. But it was a serious speech which addressed why we were addressing health care, pointed out that almost every president in the last century said that we needed to address health care reform, but we need to do so in a way that gives the American people confidence.
Representative Steuer, thanks a lot for talking
with us. You're
welcome.
Thank you.
A majority leader of the House, Steny Hoyer of Maryland, speaking with us. In the studio are E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard, our commentators who've been following the speech very, very briefly here. Matt Continetti, has the president moved the ball down the field at all this evening with his State of the Union speech?
Well, it's hard to say. I think any time the president gives a major address like this, you'll see a short-term bump in the polls for him, perhaps a short-term bump of support for his signature initiatives, which will then quickly fade away in the more general tides of politics. I think the crucial thing to understand as we begin 2010 is that when 2009 began, Republicans felt that they were in a very precarious situation if they opposed this president. And they opposed every initiative of his, and they have paid no political price. In fact, they've won two governorships in Obama states. They've won the Scott Brown seat in Massachusetts. I don't think they see any reason to not continue to oppose.
No reason to change their tactics at this point. EJ, that doesn't give much prospect of there actually being any successful legislation this year.
Well, I think in the last year, the Democrats lost two big definitional arguments. They lost the definitional argument over the stimulus because it got all mixed up with the bank bailout and the auto bailout, and they lost the definitional argument over health care. And I think the argument is you'll only start winning the fight over health care if you pass the bill and start defending it. But, you know, President Obama needed to dig himself out of a hole that was dug for him by the voters of Massachusetts. And I think he started to do that. He was likable, reminded voters why so many of them liked him. He proposed a lot of ideas that will go down well. He reaffirmed his support for health care, and he challenged the Republicans. And if I could just say one thing about Governor McDonnell, it wasn't a great speech. There was a lot of Republican boilerplate in it.
But
it
was the Republican response.
The Republican response. But it wasn't a bad speech. I suspect he did himself a little bit of good among Republicans. And one line Democrats should steal, he said, a child's educational opportunity should be determined by her intellect and work ethic, not by her zip code.
Yeah.
An excellent sentiment.
Matt Continetti, that speech by Governor McDonnell was not heavy with cultural conservatism.
No, it
was not heavy with guns or babies or anything like that.
I think he made one reference to a culture of life very briefly. And, of course, McDonnell wrote the playbook that Republicans are going to be following in 2010 by running a very upbeat campaign directed at independent voters focusing on economic issues. And so he was the perfect man to lead the response to the president, and a huge improvement over last year's response led by Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. I think Republicans will be pleased tonight.
One question I have for both of you. I don't know. I really want to know the answer to this. The president's narrative of what happened over the past year is we were on the brink of a cataclysm. The country might be slipping into another Great Depression. Many unpleasant things were done to spare us that. Only 10% unemployment is relatively good compared to what policymakers in Washington at the Fed and the Congress thought might happen. Do you think the public buys that, or does the public say, this is terrible what we're living in right now, and what it might have been last year is no excuse for the 10% unemployment we're experiencing?
Well, I don't think you can ever make a good case for 10% unemployment, but my colleague at the Brookings Institution, Bill Galston, went back and looked at what Ronald Reagan said when he confronted 10% unemployment in an address like this. And what did he do? He blamed Jimmy Carter. He had these wonderful paragraphs about what went wrong in the past. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama could have repeated them verbatim tonight if he had wanted to. He didn't go really hard on Bush, but he did suggest we inherited this mess and we're trying to fix it.
Matt, you got the last word.
Several times Obama invoked the last decade or the last administration. It's something that he's done throughout his presidency. But I think, again, when we look at actual electoral results over the past few months, we see that that card doesn't trump a bad economy and an unpopular agenda.
Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, thank you both very much for talking with us about President Obama's first State of the Union address, in which Julie Robner, as you've told us, we've heard a pledge to continue the fight for health care reform, Bill. Think we're going to see something.
I think it's still possible. I think there's a long way to go in this Congress, and I think they're going to probably fight about it for a good remainder of the Congress.
Well, I'm counting on you to be covering it for us throughout, and you have you'll have more to say online?
Yes, we will be having a live chat tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern at npr.org.
And our coverage of the State of the Union continues on many NPR stations and also at npr.org. You're listening to NPR News.